What's wrong with you?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we discuss Sense8, the Netflix original show that's taking the world by storm. Well, at least it took us by storm.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Tim Wick.
Hello.
And it's a host on the episode.
That's right. There's no guest.
It's just us here. And we're back in the luxuriant basement studios.
We've had a lot of guest episodes lately.
We have.
The Renaissance Festival was just like guest.
I know.
Guest, guest.
We've been blessed. Hashtag blessed with guests. Guest blessed.
If it's still Ron Bauman, I think it's #cursed.
#cursed.
Take that, Ron.
Love you, Ron.
We love you.
We do. It's a reticent love, but it's there. All right. So we've all been watching this amazing show. We've talked about it briefly here and there, but the show Sense8. By the Wachowskis on Netflix.
And right? J. Michael Straczynski.
It's fantastic. We are going to spoil the shit out of it, or at least we're going to talk about it in a way.
We're going to spoil some of it.
Tim hasn't seen the last two episodes, and Nick and I watched it a long time ago, but...
We binged it as soon as it came out.
Yeah.
We've had fest brain in between then and now, so we've probably forgotten a good deal of it.
So forgive us if we screw up any details, but we're going to talk about it and why you should watch it if you haven't yet. And chances are you haven't, because I don't think a lot of people have.
You know, I know some people who have talked about it, but it is it's a slower series than I think some people...
It's more like a novel, how it starts.
It definitely, I would say it took two full... And they felt like long hours, episodes for us to be like, oh, I am all about this now. I really want to watch it.
It's kind of like, so it kind of reminds me of The Wire, in that the first few episodes of The Wire are really uphill.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to kind of...
A lot of characters.
It's a huge cast of characters that are all pretty important and not obviously intertwined at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can't make those connections, you don't see those relationships... It's really difficult to figure out why the fuck you should care about all these people that you're meeting so quickly in a row. And so, much like The Wire, though, however, there's huge payoff for getting through that premise. And I think, I mean, The Wire only happened because HBO
right.
was an avenue for storytelling like that to happen. And I think Sense8, the only reason that happened is because Netflix exists the way it does.
And even before we go into the show, I want to say that I think Netflix original series, I mean, this whole kind of streaming revolution when it comes to television series is pretty amazing. Because, I mean, we talked about it with Daredevil and the same thing with Sense8.
Yep.
I mean, it all drops at once.
Yeah.
Which means you're not waiting a bunch...
Because there's no advertisers to get money through the, the waiting.
Right, yeah.
Yep.
So, there's ad-free.
The way the storytelling is done has to change, too.
Yeah. And they don't have to... There's a patience to the way they tell the story in Sense8. And you mentioned it being, sort of novel-like. I mean, I like a good action film as much as anybody else, but I like a good story that unfolds slowly. And I mean, you're dealing with a TV show that has eight central characters.
Yeah.
Eight central characters and a bunch of secondary characters. This is where we get into spoiler territory, but I mean, I think it's kind of, we can't really talk about this, but all these eight characters have a psychic link.
Yeah, so there's pods. You find out that there's pods of Sense8s, and there's always eight, thus the Sense8, which is a play on the word Sense8, one who feels.
They spell it S-E-N-S-E-8-E.
Like Sense, and then the number 8.
when they talk about the individuals, if people are sensates, S-A-T-E-S, sensates. Right.
And so the idea is there's always eight born. They're all born on the exact same date.
Right.
And they share this empathic, psychic, almost telekinetic link, because they're able to both inhabit the other bodies of other people, but also see the world through their eyes and feel what they feel.
Right.
So it's not just like a psychic link. They can actually, like, if the three of us were in a sensate pod, I could, you know, I could use Nick's computing ability. If I was needed to build a computer, he could inhabit my physical form, and it would be like he was building the computer.
Well,
instead
so there's,
of me and
there's controlling people. Sort of like taking over control.
Like stepping forward.
But then it seems like most of what's happening is sensory sharing. It's very sensual, and the filmmaking style, like the way it's all shot and the way the music is and the way they just shoot the atmosphere, mm-hmm. it really seems like most of what's coming across is the sensory input of, like, just the five main senses are what comes across the most, though they don't overtly say that. They really convey that through the way they tell the.
I'm looking at the mythology of Sense 8 page on Wikipedia. One of the things they say that I didn't know is the members of a cluster are all born on the same day at the exact same moment, and the first breath they take as one.
Yeah.
So, like, that first baby's breath, which is interesting because it makes me wonder if there's just never complications, or if they all have the same complication, or, like, what. You know, like,
well, the one from another cluster talks about the fact that right after they're born, they tend to have, like, migraines.
Yeah.
Really severe migraines for a while.
And they, it seems that to kick off a cluster, to kick off a pod, someone needs to mother it, and that involves some degree of sacrifice.
The sensate parent, I'm reading again, the sensate parent is the only person who has the ability to communicate with the cluster without being part of it or making eye contact, but the cluster has to be reborn by a sensate activating their inner connection.
It's, you know, it's funny when we were talking about this and getting ready to record on it, I wanted to refresh my memory, and I was like, awesome, I'm going to write down all eight of the protagonists.
Our sensates
for the show. I'm like, sweet, I'm going to write down, oh, okay, I write down her, oh, she's great, I love her, these parts are so great. And then I write down this one, oh, she's so great, oh, that's mm-hmm. awesome, whatever. And write down this one, oh, he's amazing, I love this character.
Yeah.
And, like, by the time I got to the bottom of the list, I was like, I kind of have, like, four different characters tied for my favorite, and I had favorite moments and favorite arcs, character arcs, and development for all of them.
Who's your favorite? Like, who are the four that you think are tied for your favorite?
I really like Sun a whole lot.
Oh, that's the Korean.
Yeah, the Korean woman.
She's like this CEO whipping boy.
Yeah.
Underground kickboxing legend. Like, she's a very complicated person.
Mm-hmm.
She's also, like, gets shit done on a, like, when it's time to, like, whoop some ass, either physically, like, literally whoop some ass, or get down to business. She's really, really hardcore.
Yeah.
I like Riley and her backstory, and she's so fucking broken, and she's the DJ with the car crash in her past and all that stuff. Like, she's tragic, but, like, I really like her a lot. I like Naomi a lot.
Naomi.
I think she's a favorite of a lot of people's.
Tim, who's your favorites out of everybody?
I'm trying to remember the character, all the character names. One of my favorites is the guy in Nairobi. Is it Nairobi?
Caffius. Caffius, yeah.
They don't say his name very often.
Yeah.
So that's
Van Damme.
Van Damme.
With his Van Damme.
With his Van Damme.
Yeah.
And I just, he, you know, he's making such complicated decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he moves into this very dark world, but he doesn't, I don't feel like he's being colored by it, if that makes any sense. It's like he, ultimately everything he's doing is for the for his mom,
right?
For her health.
For AIDS medication.
And he is working with some really, really scary, dangerous people. And, but you don't feel like
he was adamantly against, like he had ethical problems with it that he compromises on.
He compromises ethics, and yet at the same time, you don't feel ever, like his personality is ever compromised. He's not turning into a bad person.
Or even a less cheerful person. Right. He's still a positive.
He just recognizes that the biggest priority to him is his mother's health, and he's willing to sacrifice his ethics for her health.
Some of my favorite scenes were him with the drug lord, the warlord guy's daughter.
Yeah.
And him were just really, really entertaining and complicated. Like, you could see how conflicted he was about everything.
Mm-hmm. He's very conflicted about it, and yet at the same time, I don't feel like his personality gets eclipsed by being a part of that world, maybe as the series goes on, that could become a bigger issue. I'm not sure, but I like that character a lot, and I also like how cheerful he is and how accepting he is of the sensate phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's like he's just like, huh, well, I'm sitting here in the middle of Korea talking to this Korean lady, and it's not weird at all to him.
Right.
It's just like, okay, this is a thing that's happening.
I like that a lot because I like that some of them are more accepting of the interconnectedness, and others who tend to be maybe more private people reject it more. Like the one I really like Wolfgang, the German.
He was the fourth guy I was going to say.
He's so
the jewel to the safe cracker.
Yes, but also like he's the most you know it takes him longest to warm up to the idea. And I think it's because he's been very on his own. He's got his best friend or whatever, but he doesn't seem to trust people very easily.
No.
And so as a result,
look at his past, father.
But whereas I could see how Cepheus living in a very open village community, needing to ask a lot of favors, needing to give favors, needing to help each other out more in his society, whereas, the whole stereotypical, German coldness and solitude and everything.
Like, Sun might be the martial artist, and she is, physical violence or whatever, mm-hmm. and then Will, the cop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's martially inclined as well. But
he's been trained.
But Wolfgang is like the monster that they in the finale. Tim.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no.
One of us needs to do unspeakable bad things, and they all know who's the eight that does that. They all know who their wet works dude is. It's Wolfgang.
I think my second favorite would be Lido.
He's so great too.
So I love
he's
it. So everyone's awesome. Great, but I love him.
They're very well realized characters, and
just
that's the great thing about him.
The whole he's closeted, and him and his and he lives in Mexico, and him and his boyfriend, and how his boyfriend is this you can tell right away that
he's one of the writers for his show.
Yep, right? And you can tell right away that this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah,
and he's accepted that this is how it has to be, but he's also feeling like he's getting pushed to his breaking point about it. And then that girl that decides that the girl that Lido goes out with has a beard, and then she decides that she wants to live with them. So
they end up in some sort of a weird aromantic
An asexual poly relationship.
Yeah,
where she just watches them and she's happy and
gets off on it.
Yep. And this is the next thing I want to talk about with this show is this show breaks fucking barriers when it comes to trans issues, poly issues, sex in general, group sex, gay sex, straight sex.
I can't remember which two characters it is when they meet each other. I think it's Lido and maybe Will, the cop. I think it's when they first meet in person for the first time. And he says, do I know you? Have I met you? And Leto's like, oh, yeah, we all had sex once.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, right, one of those weird psychic orgy things we all had. We've never met in person, but we had sex once.
Usually sex scenes for me are, when I'm watching them on TV, they just feel... I'm just all right, I get it. Sex happens.
They're having sex.
I get it. Because it's either like it goes on for a long time, or it's not the sex part. It's like all the tension leading up. I'm like, okay, I'm getting it. But for this, for some reason, it never made me feel uncomfortable. I was never like, okay, yes, wrap it up. Sex is happening. It was a very interconnected and well shot and well.
I think it's that same emphasis on sensation,
yeah,
and on touch and the. There's something very tactile about when they're feeling each other's emotions, and like the sex stuff just seems very intimate but not dirty. It's I don't know, man. It reminds me of like taking ecstasy as a young person,
sure,
and just not necessarily it being sexy, but it being sensual.
Stay in school, kids.
Whatever.
No, everyone should take ecstasy if you can. It's really great.
Be careful. But I don't know. Just like,
yeah. But like, okay. So Nomi, who you mentioned earlier,
yeah, right,
is a trans woman, and she's and the reason that it's a point for her character that she's trans, that her mother dead names her. Oh, is she? That's awesome.
Yeah.
But when Nomi's in the hospital, you know, her mother comes in and is like, "Oh, Michael is here," and it's just every time she says that name, that dead name, it's just like a knife. Like
it really is. It's terrible.
You can feel the aggression of it.
It's her scenes are the scariest.
Oh yeah.
This when she's being held
by the psychiatrist.
In the hospital, when they're gonna cut her up or whatever.
There's some sinister shit going on in this show. There's somebody, some dude who's
some organization.
Yeah, and they're lobotomizing. They're lobotomizing sensates.
Yeah. Right.
And we don't really know why they're doing it.
Well, we know that. So okay, there was the one guy that was lobotomized. Or whatever the medical procedure is, and he ended up getting turned into like a dummy terminal.
Yes.
Where he was just kind of on autopilot in an assisted living home, not capable of holding a conversation or anything, but whispers could jump into him and take control and everything worked.
Yeah.
Everything was there. There was light behind the eyes. It just wasn't this guy's light.
It was somebody
whispers
else's.
Who is this like sensate fucking like witch hunter.
Yeah.
But like, he's also clearly a sensate himself.
He is. But he's got a degree or a level of control that is like borderline infectious.
Well, and there's that stuff, and then there's also, isn't there something with the cop has like an unsolved murder? Is that coming into play?
Yeah, there's something. There's him and a little girl had some connection.
Yeah.
And she may have been in a different pod or cluster.
Yeah, and so like that's...
And something to do with her murder or her disappearance has something to do with this shadowy organization in some way that we didn't get a lot of answers, but we got a lot of...
Set up
for it. There's also...
There's a lot of visual metaphor they use in the show that I like. Like, one of the things I love about the opening credits is I mean, they're showing you, like, the different parts of the world these people are from. But they're, like, there's imagery that's used over and over again. Bridges is an image that's used over and over again. Waterways is an image that's used over and over again, both of which can imply, you know, a connection.
Yeah.
Something that connects people across a long distance.
Yeah.
There is... religion's a really big theme.
Sure.
Yep.
Lots of temples. I mean, the whole thing... They're burst... in a cathedral, in a ruined church. Not a cathedral, a ruined church.
That's right.
So over the credits, Nick and I like to sing
everywhere. Holy shit, it's a zebra!
What's that?
Oh my God, it's everywhere.
Now we're in India.
Oh my God,
literally everywhere. This is happening everywhere. Because like it is, because the show is happening everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like almost every continent and like the whole,
You mentioned the religious... iconography in the intro, Tim. One of the characters is religious and devout.
Yep.
Kala, the woman in the arranged marriage.
The Indian woman. The Hindu
woman.
Yeah.
Except it's not an arranged marriage. It's
it.
It's It is, but it's not a sight unseen marriage.
It's a very modern.
It's a modern arranged marriage.
It's theoretically a love match, except she's not in love with him.
Yeah, right. It's an arranged marriage, which is what it's the idea of you'll fall in love eventually.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that she's not in love with him. She's basically faking.
Yes.
Everyone believes that it's a love match.
I believe,
And a couple of people probably, it seems, can tell.
Yeah, there may be some suspicion.
Her friend
there.
Is way into this dude.
It certainly doesn't seem like she met him on her own and they fell in love. It seems like they knew each other's families. Yeah. And
she worked at his company.
Yeah,
that's right.
His father owned the tech career. He totally had the hots for her.
That's right.
And she kind of made the decision that it was a decent...
She's like a pharmaceutical STEM lady in his company.
She's a scientist.
Am I thinking of Sun? Was Sun...
She's the CEO. Fuck-up brother.
She's probably...
It's her brother that's the fuck-up, not her husband. That's what it is.
Her brother's the fuck-up from hell.
Takes the fall for her
I was thinking
life.
That was her husband, but it's her brother.
One of the worst people in
her
the
Her dad is
show.
One of the worst people. I mean, her brother is bad and everything, but like...
Her dad is like, I have to choose between my daughter and my complete fuck-up of a son, and I'm going to choose my complete fuck-up of a son.
Because at least he's a male heir.
Because he's a man.
Yeah, at least he's a male heir,
What a bunch of bullshit.
The Leto stuff is really great. The Wolfgang.
They're all there. I mean, the great thing is they're all great. They all, and it's
there's
like,
no character I don't like who I'm not supposed to not like. Like,
they all have
different reasons.
And the way they take this idea, which is, I mean, it's almost like a superhero origin story.
Totally
except
is.
They're really right now, they're superheroes for each other. They protect each other.
Yeah.
They work together to preserve the cluster.
It kind of reminds me of like what Heroes could have been if that wasn't just a fumbling nightmare.
Or like when Cadmus is about to do hand-to-hand combat with drug lords dudes.
Yeah.
And he's like, what he does is he basically like calls out with his brain and senses, help me. I need help. Like, someone help me. And it's Sun that's like, oh.
I can
fuck
these
guys up. And
she
just kind of calmly, and you see... Yeah. The changes in the actors are amazing because, yes, sometimes they just show Bayduna as, you know, like in the place of Cadmus and doing all the actress who plays Sun doing all the fighting. But then sometimes they show the actor who plays Cadmus acting as though he is being embodied by Sun's character.
So he's acting like her character in
his
body.
And they do change a little bit.
Totally, their mannerisms.
And there's definitely, like, you
can
tell...
Their posture, how they hold themselves.
It's really fantastic.
One of my favorite scenes with Cadmus, though, is later when he's, like, sort of calling out for help again, and he does that, you know, that Van Damme pose.
Yeah.
And he doesn't make it... He doesn't make it.
No, nobody's there.
Yeah,
nobody
no one's there.
He does the worst kick ever.
Yeah.
It's...
And falls on his back, and it's like... It's scary because he's in horrible danger.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's also kind of hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have to take all eight actors. They shoot in location all over the world. And they have to take all of the main characters with them wherever they go. Because they sub in for, like, if someone is... You know, if Sun is controlling Nomi, then they have to film.
Well, I suppose they at least know, maybe not everyone.
But But no, they wanted, I read about, they wanted the cast to bond as a group and to travel and to be together all of this.
That's great.
And so, some of the interviewers, they were talking about like, Bae has family in Korea, so when we were all in Korea for filming some of her scenes, like, she introduced us to... She took us around town, and we went here and there and wherever.
That's really cool.
And, like, there's a lot of stories about them as a cast kind of bonding in this way that I... You know, the Wachowskis, they can... Sometimes their eyes are bigger than their stomach.
Matrix 3.
Right. but like no one can say that, like, if you give them the opportunity to do something with very little conditions or kind of unfettered, that they're capable of doing remarkable and amazing things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I worry, you know, because season one, really good. I worry because The Matrix was amazing, and then it just completely tanked, and it's like...
But they've got J. Michael Straczynski.
Right.
Yeah, so
and
maybe...
JMS,
he's good
Babylon
story.
Babylon 5...
He's great at story and character.
I haven't seen all B5, but like, it's a long epic. It's B5 a long.
B5 is what you call it when you're cool.
It's a long.
You're down with the JMS.
Well, it's like DS9 or, you know.
Whatever. That's right. Yeah.
But it's.
If you love the show, it's DS9. It's not Deep Space Nine.
That's a long plot. There's a seeds and stuff in the beginning that have like payoff seasons and seasons later. And so I'm hopeful. I don't know. I think it's something special, and I hope we get to see where it goes.
I
know they're doing at least one more.
And yeah.
Yeah, I saw it got picked up for season two.
They're definitely doing season two. I think, you know, it has this. From the Wachowskis, the diversity is not unexpected. You know, since Lana Wachowski is trans, which doesn't mean that they would automatically put a trans character in there. But I think that probably helps them.
They understand why it's important.
Be more aware of.
Yeah.
If you're going to create a diverse mm-hmm. Group. A diverse sensate cluster, you know, then diversity has to include things like gender fluidity mm-hmm. and like relationships.
Polyamory. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea for these weird, like, let's call them clusterfuck scenes where, sure, Will the cop might be straight, but if he's sharing a brain with seven other people who are all over the damn place, then sexual attraction gets very blurry.
Well, and he's feeling, he's feeling what they're feeling.
Right.
So if you're feeling what I'm feeling and what I'm feeling is attraction to my same gender,
then
you're feeling that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's cool. Yeah. Right. I think it spoke a lot about the idea that no one is one thing. Everyone's something with a shade of something else.
No one really comes out of that same.
Very few people are a Kinsey 0 or a Kinsey 6.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty fucking rare.
Yeah, and the great thing with the Noomi character, or Noomi.
Noomi.
Character is the only time people are behaving in a way that is negative towards her identity as mm-hmm. a woman. It is portrayed as they are being awful.
They're villainous. Yeah.
Even the guy that, when she was presenting as male, that she used to talk to as a hacker, when he shows up, and she's like, hey, and he's like, he goes, Michael? And then he goes, and she's like, no, and he's like, damn, girl, like, you look incredible. And from then on, he never, not a single time does he ever call her Michael, does he ever say him.
Yeah.
He just instantly is like, shit, all right, like, you look great. Like, and it's really, it's great to show both.
Yeah.
It's not just that only people who met her as Noomi can respect her as Noomi.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
On the other side of that, they also portray, when you've got the gay character, Lito. Who's gay and he's an action star in Mexico and being openly gay.
Muy macho.
Muy macho. He can't be openly gay because of his career and where he lives.
Or so he thinks, at least.
Yeah. So he thinks.
He has decided that.
He has decided that he needs... And so there's the counterpoint to that where you've got... they don't ignore the fact that sexuality is still something that's not...
Yep.
Right.
100% accepted.
Absolutely.
Noomi is in a much better situation. She lives in San Francisco. She lives in a city that is extremely accepting of gender fluidity.
Yeah.
But also, like, one wrong step and all of a sudden you're in a state where you have none of those rights and none of those protections.
Exactly. And one wrong step and you're in a hospital
fast
with your mother.
It was... She had zero power and zero control.
And Amanita had no rights.
Right.
And
I mean, it shows the contrast... in America that exists.
Yeah.
Some places are amazing and accepting and you're...
Until you're under the institutional...
And then all of a sudden,
grip.
Bam, you have nothing. Yeah.
Anyway, so Sense8 is amazing. If you guys haven't watched it, you really should get on that. Don't be behind the trolley on this. You're going to want to be ahead of it.
Get through the first few episodes.
If the first episode feels slow to you... Again, like Nick said, think of it as the opening few chapters to a really long book.
Yeah.
And how it's like a Neal Stephenson book can take you a little while to warm up to. Like something like that.
It's like The Wire. It's worth the first.
If you have watched it, we would love to hear what you think. Obviously, we always want to know. So let's get to five questions.
Five questions.
So we have a new five questions from Josh Helton.
And this is like our first listener
It is.
It is.
So Josh Helton says we had read his answers off, his first five, off on the proofreading bonus episode.
So go back and review
that. That's a long time ago, but he says he's been listening since episode 6, he thinks.
Yeah.
So we're sorry.
Josh,
we're sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry you haven't listened to episodes 1 through 5. Go back and
I'm not sorry.
Come on, Josh.
What's the episode of that? Yeah.
Hey, Josh, what's the best... What movie would you stop and watch anytime it's on?
Clerks 2. I don't catch it too often anymore because we got rid of cable years ago, but if anybody is watching it, I'll gladly sit down and watch with them. I've seen it a lot more lately. The depression has gotten really bad, but watching it helps, much like how the go-karts help Randall.
Huh.
I get that.
I stopped and watched Mallrats like halfway through the other day. I was just like, I'll watch the last half hour of Mallrats. Clerks 2 has those great musical scenes,
I love Clerks 2. I love it.
ABC.
Yeah, and BCL.
I'm taking it back.
What is, number two is, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
I have a DVD that was published with a Czech gaming mag that has a Morrowind mod I created on it. My username is in the magazine also, and it's one of the few parts I can read of it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super. So he made a Morrowind mod, and then a Czech gaming mag published it, featuring it.
Awesome.
That's super cool.
Check gaming mag. All right. Question number three. What supernatural being do you wish? See, now you got me messed up.
It's contagious. You guys are in a pod.
Oh, no. What do you wish was real?
This is the one question I had an issue with trying to come up with some reason. Most all-powerful beings are mass-murdering fuckheads. So I decided to go with the Doctor. We don't have a scientific explanation for the regeneration, so it matches the criteria for supernatural. I think it's personally funny that he said most all-powerful beings are mass-murdering fuckheads, so instead I went with the Doctor, who is, you know, a mass-murdering nice guy.
He killed off an entire race, or at least he thought he did.
There's been times where, like, he, like, stopped races of evil aliens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and ended them. Like,
the Daleks, he completely eradicated the Daleks. He's killed a lot.
He's killed a lot of people.
But in a good way.
He's the good guy. He's on our side.
Earth
rolls hard.
He's the two nukes that end World War II. It was a necessary...
He is both fat man and little boy.
That is a really interesting analogy.
Question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem humanity now faces?
The fear and hatred of anyone not like ourselves. With religion gone, people will still draw lines dividing what makes them different from anybody else. The absence of religion will assist in helping that, but it's a first step. Yeah, that's basically what Ron Bauman said too, tribalism.
Yeah.
And I think Tony said fear of the other. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's a common response to that question.
Yeah, it's a good one, though. Certainly it makes sense.
Yeah. Question number five, what's your favorite quote?
Hodor. Attributed to Hodor.
Attributed to Hodor.
Well, I'm
Do
reading
we know
that
for
dash.
Sure? Do we know for sure
it
that
says,
it was
quote,
Hodor?
It says, quote, Hodor, period, quote, dash Hodor. So, yes, not an M dash, just a hyphen.
Yeah. I think the great thing about that quote Hodor. Is it can mean whatever you want. It literally means... Everything.
Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. That's so racist.
Yeah.
I expected better of him, really.
I mean, Josh, Jesus.
Seriously, I thought it was beautiful.
You would.
Yay. Oh God, it's good to get back to your five answers. If you want to answer our five new questions, please send in your responses to 5questions@geeksithoutgod.com. You can answer them even if you answered the other ones, as Josh Helton did. So please, just because you already answered 5 questions, it doesn't mean you can't answer these new ones. That's why we came up with the new ones.
It's a secret.
But that's
why,
guys.
Oh, is that a secret?
If you listen this far in the podcast, you get to find out the secret.
This is my whispering voice. It's a lot like my regular voice.
It's somehow less husky.
It's louder. I don't know why. Right. So yes, please rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell that crazy religious uncle you're going to have Thanksgiving dinner with soon
that he should
listen to our podcast. Tell the people who post racist memes on your wall. Tell everyone. Just tell your dog, tell your friends. We need more listeners.
Dogs love Geeks Without God.
That's a rock fact. Yeah, that's true. We've been Geeks Without God. You've been the listeners. This has been amazing. Goodbye. That sex scene made me feel stuff. Like when I watched that Madonna video that's in black and white where all the people are having all the sex.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Quit capitalizing my ex iPhone.